Sorting Through Opinions on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Someone has to put together the newspaper opinion page. In the Quad Cities, it's Ed Tibbetts, and he's with us today on Scribble. Ed, what separates the editorial page from the rest of the paper? Are you involved just in that, or do you do other things at the paper?
I am charged with putting out the editorial page. I'm aware of what goes on in the newsroom, but we try to keep those sides separate.
Oh, that's always a good
idea. Always a good idea.
I remember Colonel McCormick was never too careful about that with the Chicago Tribune. Sometimes his opinions would show up on the front page.
Right.
But, you know, that must be an interesting job because, first of all, let's talk about the newspaper editorial itself. When the newspaper speaks, gives an opinion, do you have a committee that meets on that, or is it strictly your decision?
We have an editorial board made up of about a half dozen people. And so we try to operate by consensus. We don't have a formal voting procedure. We just went through a process by which we endorsed a candidate in the Iowa caucuses. And so there was a lot of discussion, again, not a formal voting process, but a lot of discussion about all the candidates that we interviewed. There were about 10 of them in all. And we eventually came to a consensus. And we do that in all the editorials that we write. Now, I'm charged with doing the writing. I often pick the topics. I will pitch an editorial to the board, and we'll talk about it. A lot of it does fall on my shoulders. But in the end, it's a consensus process.
Does that mean that sometimes you wind up writing an editorial on something with which you might not completely agree?
I would say that's probably true. You know, we try to reflect the view of the institution itself as expressed by six people. I can't think that any six people would walk into a voting booth and make the same choice, right?
That's true.
So at some point or another, you're not going to get all you want. But we do try to make sure that as much as possible we're consistent and that we do take into account the beliefs of all the people on the board.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you know how provocative to make it? I mean, you don't want to write a column that is so blah that nobody will read
right,
it.
Right.
On the other hand, you don't want to, you know, 5% of the people saying, that's it, I'm going to quit the paper.
Yeah, that's a challenge. and I don't think we calibrate our editorials with an eye towards whether people will like us or not. I do the writing on these. When I write, I try to take into account what I know are the beliefs of the people on the board, what we've discussed, and I try to keep it within, within those boundaries. And so an editorial that I write might not be as fiery as sometimes I would like to make it, but that is, I think, you know, part of what comes with consensus.
In your career as an editorial writer, have you ever written an editorial through gritted teeth?
Well, I have to say my career as an editorial writer consists of not quite 2 years. For the bulk of the 30 years that I've spent in the Quad Cities at the Quad City Times, I've been a reporter. And so that part about writing through gritted teeth has probably come in both aspects of my work. I think people know that journalists have opinions, but on the news side, we do our best to keep them out of the newspaper, and on the opinion side, we're paid to be provocative and to challenge people.
Do you notice now that you're the editorial editor for both papers, the Argus and the Times, that the readership is different. I'm thinking of my home. I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, and our paper was the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, but the other third of the town, it was the St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Sure.
And you couldn't write an editorial for the St. Paul Pioneer Press that would fly in the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. And I delivered newspapers. I, in fact, got a college scholarship out of delivering newspapers and a helicopter ride for getting 10 new customers 1 year. And
that's a unique prize.
And so I got to the point where I could, if I was looking for new subscribers, I knew which houses shouldn't even bother to go to because they were St. Paul people and not Minneapolis people. To some extent, that has to be true of the Argus and Times too.
I think there are probably differences in the readership of the two newspapers. I cannot tell you with any certainty.
Well, that's all right. Give us a hunch.
what the differences are. I think it's fairly easy to say that the readers of the Dispatch Argus more centered in Illinois, more interested in Illinois news.
Right.
The readers of the Times are more centered in Iowa. I think that over the years that I've been here, the Dispatch Argus editorial page has probably been a bit more conservative than the Quad City Times,
right,
certainly in recent history. Although I can recall going back in my career at the Times, going back to the late 80s, when the Times editorial board was fairly conservative. So I think there's been some shift there. Now that, we have one editorial board essentially that speaks to both, what I try to keep in mind is that we're one community. We're one regional area. And yes, there are folks, Don, you and I have talked about it, people from the Illinois side or even parts of the Illinois side who don't venture beyond their neighborhoods and their cities. But we tend to think of the Quad Cities as one region, and on the editorial page, we try to reflect that.
I can remember back in the day when there was a separate Argus and a separate Dispatch, the ownership of both papers was quite conservative, but Rock Island was very democratic and very fairly liberal, and so the paper had that tone. And Moline is quite Republican, so it had that tone. So you had a contrast between the two. And when Rob Small bought the Argus and put the two together, I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. Let's see how it sorts out. But it sorted out pretty well because they kind of played both sides and in selecting columnists and selecting subjects. They seemed to achieve some kind of balance. Do you look for a balance, or does the opinion of the editorial board kind of drive everything that's on the page?
I would say I look for, I don't know if balance is so much what I look for. I look for a diversity of opinion. So in terms of the House editorials that we write, they come from a particular point of view. The editorial board for the Dispatch Argus and the Quad City Times are pretty much the same. So those editorials are going to be the same. But as you know, there are other aspects of the page. There's people that write columns. There's people that write letters to the editor. And what I try to do is curate a page each day that is provocative to people, that shows a diversity of opinion, both politically, demographically, and otherwise. It's a big community, and I try to reflect that.
How important are letters to the editor? Do they come in at a pretty good clip, or is there an
peaks
undulating
and valleys.
Wave?
Peaks and valleys. I would say that lately, particularly since the impeachment process, they've been coming in at a pretty good clip. And they are a very important part of the newspaper. They are our audience speaking to us. And I try to give folks as much free rein as is responsible. And I think they're a very well-read part of the editorial page.
That's probably true. I think, I wonder, do you assess, I remember back years ago, the Dispatch used to be really solid on polling, surveying the community. I remember one time they did a survey of a scope that really surprised me, and we learned amazing things about the community, things I had never known. But I'm not part of the paper, but I was privy to it because of my friendship with Rob.
Sure.
But do you find people basing their opinion of the newspaper on the news coverage or the opinion page?
Well, I have to say that, you know, my answer to that question isn't informed by surveys that we've done, but more by experience and what I hear from people. And I think that, I think in many cases, people sort of take us as one. I think there's a recognition that the editorial page is different, but I don't know how much people sort of sort that out when they form their opinions about whether a newspaper is liberal or conservative one way or another.
Or whether I should cancel my subscription right now.
Well, there's a lot of factors that go into that, and a lot of those have nothing to do with what appears on the editorial page.
Well, a lot of those are just talk. You know, people say, I'm going to cancel my subscription, and then they're back in letters to the editor. But how did you get into this tawdry business of journalism?
Well, I can't say that I came by it honestly. Who does, right?
There we go.
I decided when I was a young man that I wanted to be a radio broadcaster. And for one reason or another, I veered into journalism, first as a television reporter. And then when I got tired of equipment breaking down on me, I thought, well, what could be more simple than writing for a newspaper, right?
So you actually started in radio.
In radio and television, yes. I worked in Cedar Rapids for a couple of years doing that. Oh. And as I say, I decided the technology part of it wasn't something to my liking. So I wanted to, get into print. Of course, now we're all about technology. So look where it got me.
So was the Times your first job as a newspaper reporter?
As a newspaper reporter, yeah. I came here in 1989 to work as a police reporter. Did that for a short period and then went to covering local government in 1990 and then got into covering politics.
How about the whole move into digital service? Some newspapers have disappeared completely, just gone out of business. Some have transferred to a digital platform. And many operate on both levels. How has that come about, and how does that work? Do you have a separate crew that works on the digital side, and how do you divide up the responsibilities?
Well, we have people who are responsible for the digital side of the newspaper. But in terms of the people who write, which is where my experience lays, we are responsible basically for thinking about both sides of the house, writing for digital, writing for print as well. Changes the way that we do things, changes the flow of our day. As a political reporter for many years, I like to liken it to the idea of being the old-fashioned wire service reporter. Where you'd go and you'd file copy 3, 4, 5 times a day. It'd go out over a teletype and it would eventually end up in the newspaper. Well, now the publishing platform is the internet. And so a lot of times when I would cover a political campaign, I was filing things 3, 4, 5 times a day. Wasn't exactly that way when I first started, when, you know, there was no internet. Or at least we weren't using the internet in the newspaper business.
But doesn't that really change the whole rhythm of the newspaper? It used to be when you had a deadline to meet because you had to get the presses rolling at a certain time to be delivered at a certain time. But once you're in a digital operation, that goes 24 hours, doesn't it?
It changes the way that people who write and who edit do their job, certainly. As I say, when I first started, I had much of the day to produce a story. I didn't have a deadline, during the day, except what I needed to do to file for print. Now that's different, and that definitely changes the way that we do our jobs.
But does that affect the editorial side?
The editorial side, not so much. I think that at least so far, the news side is probably more affected by that sort of thing. I'm not updating editorials several times a day. I probably could do more running commentary online, but for the most part, I think that fact of life is something that is felt more on the news side.
Take us through a typical day, Ed. I mean, you come to you start in the morning, and what do you do?
A lot of times what I do is I'll do what anybody else does who comes into the office. I'll answer messages, that sort of thing. We've always got people who want to get something into the paper, who want to comment on something in the paper. I'll work on letters to the editor and make sure that they're shaped up. I'll look through our syndicated services to find out what is provocative for that day. I keep up with the news, of course, because we want to be right. Timely. I write an editorial for the newspaper several times a week. And so
do that all in one shot, or do you think about it in the morning and then about 10 come back to it?
I try to think strategically and have editorials in mind for the mid part of the week and the later part of the week, and I try to do the reporting and the writing that's necessary to get those done. I don't block out time for each particular part of my job, but after I've done this for a couple of years, I sort of fall into a rhythm where I know what I need to do and when I need to do it. So every day is sort of dealt with. I'm dealing with different aspects of putting together the page.
So once you're through writing an editorial, do you need to get it checked, or do you get it checked by someone else?
I shop it out to the editorial board. We talk about it, make changes if necessary, and it goes through an editing process.
Okay.
I have an editor as well who looks over what I do to make sure that
editing the editor.
Editing the editor.
How broad a range of material do you have? I've noticed Michael Gerson, who is a New York Times columnist. Excellent guy, by the way.
Yeah, Washington Post, actually.
Washington Post,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful writer.
Great conservative writer and thinker. I really admire Michael Gerson. But how broad a range? I mean, you can't just pick and choose. You have to buy a membership or something?
Yeah, we have syndicates that we paid for, both newspapers. And so the Washington Post News Service is one of them. The Tribune Content Agency is one as well. They offer a menu of writers that I choose from.
There are some people that will offer you free columns and cartoons.
They do. We appreciate that.
Well, but, you know, they're like the IPI. They have an agenda.
Not all, but yes, you're right. We do get submissions from organizations that have an agenda, which I think lends to the diversity of the page. We have conservative outfits that send me columns that I run. We have progressive organizations that submit stuff. I run those too.
How tough an issue is that for you? I mean, are you looking at a full garden of opinion and you have to winnow it down to something, or do you go in with preconceptions of what you need that day?
I look for something that I think that is timely, that is provocative, and that will inform people. Perhaps it's because I've been a reporter for almost my entire career. I look for pieces that inform probably more than I do for pieces that provoke.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I always want a lively writing style to put on the page. But I want people to go to the newspaper because they want to be smarter, and I want to scratch that itch.
Boy, if you can provoke people into thinking, good luck. I mean, it's not a popular activity these days.
Do you write, when you sit down to write something, do you have a certain age group in mind?
No.
That you're writing for?
Well, I wouldn't say that's entirely true that we don't. I think that when I'm either writing or curating a page, one of the things that I think about is trying to reach out to and to reflect people that might not people that might not see themselves in the newspaper or who might not ordinarily have their opinions exposed. I think that's important for an editorial page to do. Young people, people in the community, say, who aren't used to being heard, I want them to be heard. And so when I write and when I look for opinions to put on the page, I do keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, knowing my own grandchildren, of whom quite a few live in town, I can't imagine, I don't think, I'm ashamed to say, any of them read a newspaper.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I am too. I delivered the paper. I lived on it. I got money for it. But I cannot imagine getting up in the morning without a newspaper. Yeah. I know. If somehow in the future you went down to one page, I'd subscribe. Right.
I'm glad to hear that. And that's it's a challenge for us. Obviously,
it's gotta be.
People who are our age tend to read the newspaper. People who are younger don't.
Right.
That is a challenge for our industry.
And do you think they ever will? Is there some way of bringing them back?
I think young people, just like people who are older, want to know what's going on in their community. They want to know what's going on in their world. And they're looking for information. But they're not getting it in the same places that
they
you
get
and
it on
I
the
got.
Internet.
Right. A lot of that, though, begins with a reporter at a newspaper in the field. And so our challenge as an industry is to make sure that those folks are looking to us as opposed to somebody who is either repurposing our content or putting out, frankly, information that's not reliable.
Well, you know, for a while they said, well, Kindle and Nook are going to do in books. And for a while, they really made inroads, and it turns out that Kindle is not used as much anymore as it has been, and the number of books and book readers is going up.
The social media is spreading like a fungus, and that's unfortunate. But Ed, thank you very much for talking to us, and keep up the good work, because Lord knows we need newspapers. We need the facts, and we need stuff that's edited. And I can't tell you how relieved I am to find out that even the editorial page editor is edited. Ed Tibbetts, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And now, holding the book bag, we bring you Roll Tweet.
I have a book to recommend today that you said you recommended several years ago, and maybe I vaguely remember that, but it's worth mentioning again. It's one Don Erickson gave me a couple of months ago. It's called The Library Book by Susan Orlean, O-R-L-E-A-N, and it's the center of the book is the burning of the Los Angeles Public Library in 1986 in an incredibly huge fire.
Oh, yeah.
During which 400,000 books were completely destroyed, reduced to ashes, and 700,000 were damaged by water or soot. And many of those could be brought back. But around this fire is the story of the library itself, the design of the library, the kind of patrons that use it. I mean, it is like many libraries. Even a small library is a world within itself. You know, the patrons that come there tend to be people that know each other and see each other. There's a history of library fires in this book. It turns out the first library fire on record is 235 BC.
Yeah.
It covers the destruction of the library at Alexandria, what a library that must have been.
I weep every time I think of that. It lost all the plays that they had of Sophocles, Euripides, Aeschylus, the writings of the Greek scholars. They were just loaded. They had it all and gone.
But there have been other similar, not as extensive as that maybe, but library fires, it turns out, are fairly common. It covers the trial of the young man who is believed to have started the fire. It turns out that almost all library fires are arson. It's assumed from the very beginning, because how else would they start? There's a whole section on restoring wet and burned books. How do you do that? That's an incredible process. But this, the Los Angeles Public Library has got to be a world unto itself. It's got several hundred employees, some of whom do nothing but route books on, send books, buy books. You know, they're buying thousands of books every week and deaccessing thousands of books every week. It talks about the important kinds of collections they've got, maps that people donate and give to. And it talks about where libraries are going, the evolution of the library from a place, a warehouse for books, into a world that now is more an information center. Books are only a small part of what the library does today. But it is a loving tribute to the Los Angeles Public Library.
When you say something like deaccessioning, I think that's a fancy word for something you shouldn't do. Get rid of books.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, the Augustana Library has run into complaints about that too, but there's only so much space.
I don't know how you solve that either. It's putting them, you know, on the computer doesn't help, because computers, that's a good way to lose things. You know, there are people who talk about, well, putting public records on the internet. No, putting them on a computer. No way.
They now say, don't do that.
No.
Or keep a paper copy, because the paper is going to outlast any digital information that you've got.
Absolutely. It seems odd to say that, because paper is so fragile, appears to be so fragile, but it lasts a good long time. And there are people who are selling these computers, you know, tell public officials, oh, you're going to save space, you're going to save time, it'll be safe, it'll be accurate. No, it won't. It really won't. There have been communities that have run into serious problems by doing that, and then they lose everything.
One of the interesting subtopics in this book is, you know, and the local libraries are subject to that just as much as the Los Angeles Library, what to do with the homeless people who come there and use the library to as a place to warm up, use the bathroom, and so forth. What obligation do you, should you chase them out, or are somehow, could you make accommodations for them?
If they come in and read, how can you complain?
Well, they don't necessarily read. Do they have to read to stay there?
Well, now you're in a real problem. I don't know the answer to that one. It's true. It's a warm and inviting place, and why not go there?
Yeah.
But if you go, you better at least read a newspaper. Okay, that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. Thank you for joining us today. Try it again next week when we'll return for another Scribble.